1.04. If any of the tissue that caused the chemical and neurological reactions associated with awe were still part of what little organics remained of the Fabricator General's brain, he would no doubt have found the view through the polarized glass that topped the peak of his forge awesome. But Kelbor Hal, as his human name had once been, was capable of little in the way of emotional response these days, save bitter anger and frustration. Far below him, the vast forge complex of Olympus Mons stretched away beyond sight. The towering manufactorum, refineries, worker habs, machine shops and assembly hangars covering thousands of square kilometres of Mars's surface. The vast hive of manufacture was home to billions of faithful tech priests of the machine god, the great and powerful deity that governed every aspect of life on Mars, from the lowliest tertiary reserve unit of the PDF to the mightiest forge master. Greatest of the structures arrayed before him was the Temple of All Knowledge, a towering pyramid of pink and black marble, crowned with a dome of glittering blue stone and a forest of iron spires that pierced the sky and pumped toxic clouds into the atmosphere. Vast pilasters framed a yawning gateway at its base, the marble inscribed with millions of mathematical formulae and proofs, many of which had been developed by Kelbor Hal himself. Mightier, and home to more workers, priests and servitors than the Mondus Gamma complex of Ertzi Malevolus, where untold thousands of suits of battle plate and weapons were produced to supply the Astartes legions of the Crusade, the Olympus Mons Forge was less a building and more of a region. The Fabricator General knew he should be proud of his accomplishments, for he had uncovered more technology than any before him, and had overseen the longest reign of increasing production quotas in the Mechanicum's long history. But pride, like many other emotional responses, had all but vanished as the organic cogitator, once housed in his skull, had been gradually replaced with synthetic synapses and efficient conduits for logical thought. The Fabricator General was over 80% augmetic, barely anything that could be called human remaining of his birth flesh, a fact of which he was supremely glad. While the fleshy organ remained in his head, he could feel every biological portion decaying with each passing moment, each relentless tick of the clock a moment closer to the grave, and the loss of everything he had learned over the centuries. No, it was better to be free of flesh and the doubts it fostered. Far below, thousands of workers filed along the stone-flagged roadway of the Via Omnisia, its surface worn into grooves by the sandaled feet of a billion supplicants. A score of battle titans lined the wide road, their majesty and power reminding the inhabitants of his city, though they needed no reminding, of their place in the equation that was the workings of Mars. Monolithic buildings flanked the roadways, factories, machine temples, tech shrines and engine reliquaries, all dedicated to the worship and glorification of the Omnisire. Vast prayer ships filled the sky above the volcano, gold-skinned zeppelins broadcasting endless streams of binaric machine language from brass megaphones. Bobbing drone skulls trailing long streams of code on yellowed parchment swarmed behind the zeppelins like shoals of small fish. The people below would be hoping their prayers would cause the machine god to turn his face towards them and grant a boon. To many of those below, the Omnisire was a tangible being, a golden figure that had last trod the surface of Mars 2 centuries ago. The false god who had enslaved the Martian priesthood to his will with his lies. The Fabricator General turned from the vista spread before him, his own fiefdom, as he heard a chiming blurt of binary from the ebony-skinned automaton. Robot was too crude a word for a work of such genius, standing behind him. Its form was smooth, athletic and featureless, a gift from Lucas Crom some years ago that sealed the compact between them. Had the automaton worn a suit of skin, its form would have been indistinguishable from that of a human. Such was Crom's genius with automata that he could craft designs in metal and plastic so perfectly that they would have shamed the creator of humanity himself, had he existed. Though its form appeared unarmed, it was equipped with a multitude of digital weapons worked into the lengths of its fingers, and energized blades could spring from its extremities at a moment's notice. The automaton was warning him of approaching life forms, and the Fabricator General turned his attention to the brass-rimmed shaft in the floor behind him. The pale, rubberized mask of humanity he wore when meeting those who served him slipped over his mechanized face, a face that had been unrecognizable as human for many years. A wide disc of silver metal, ringed with brass and steel guardrails, rose up through the floor with a pneumatic hiss. Borne upon the disc were four individuals, three swathed in the robes of adepts of the Mechanicum, one in the dark fur-collared robes of an ambassador. The circuitry on the back of the mask meshed with the machine parts of Kelbor Hal's face, the features of his false visage manipulated into the approximation of the human expression of welcome. "My fellow adepts, welcome to my forge," he canted with a binary blurt precisely modulated to convey his authority and wealth of knowledge. The dark-robed figure, Ambassador Melgator, stepped from the transit disc and inclined his head towards the Fabricator General. Melgator was no stranger to this place, his political duties taking him all across Mars, but always bringing him back to report on the machinations and tempers of the Martian adepts. Save for the ribbed cabling covering the elongated cone of his skull, the man's face was loathsomely organic, his skin waxy and his eyes saturnine, dark and reptilian. Melgator had sacrificed the gift of further augmentation since his role as Mechanicum ambassador often took him to the gilded halls of terror. The fleshy rulers of the Emperor's realm were stupidly squeamish with those whose communion with the machine god rendered them strange and almost alien to their limited perceptions. Behind Melgator came two of Kelbor Hal's most trusted followers, adepts who had followed his lead in all things, who had sworn the strength of their forges to him, Adept Lucas Crom and Adept Ertzi Malevolus. Crom was the larger of the two adepts, his wide-shouldered frame swathed in a deep crimson robe that did little to disguise the many mechanized enhancements with which he had been blessed. Ribbed pipes and cables looped around his limbs and linked into a hissing power pack that rose like a set of wings at his back. His human face had long since been replaced by an iron mask fashioned in the form of a grinning skull. Wires trailed from the jaw, and a pulsing red light filled both eye sockets. Master Adept Ertzi Malevolus favored a dark bronze for his face mask, and a trio of green augmetic eyes set into the metal illuminated the interior surfaces of his red hood. The master of Mondus Gamma's red robes were fashioned from vulcanized rubber, thick and hard-wearing, and a monstrously large power pack was affixed to his back, its bulk held aloft by tiny suspensor fields. Remote probe robots darted back and forth from his body, kept in check by the coiled cables that connected them to the senior adept. Current flowed between their three forges as a sign of good faith, shared freely and without recourse to monitoring. Of course, the greater part of that current was directed to the Fabricator General's forge complex, but such was his right and privilege as Master of Mars. The final figure to join the Fabricator General in his sanctum was one who had not set foot on Mars for some time. An adept who had seceded his forge and all its holdings to Kelbor Hal when he had left to accompany the 63rd expedition to the furthest corners of the galaxy. His robes were a deep red and gave no clue to what form lay beneath them, though Kelbor Hal knew that little remained of his humanity. His name was Regulus, and this favored son of Mars had returned with news of the War Master's campaigns.
"Fabricator General," said Regulus with a deep bow,
making the icon Mechanicum with clicking metal digits that unfolded from beneath his robes.
"I welcome the flow of current from your forge along my limbs and within the primary locomotive engine of my body. Power whose generation comes not from Mars is bland and without vitality. It serves but does not nourish. Each time I return to the wellspring of power and knowledge of Mars, I realize how much poorer is energy generated beyond our world."
"You honor my forge, Regulus," replied Kelbor Hal,
acknowledging the compliment and turning his attention to his vassal adepts.
"Crom, Malevolus, you are welcome here as always."
The two adepts said nothing, knowing that Kelbor Hal could read their acceptance of his dominance by the subtle fluctuations of their electrical fields.
"What news of the War Master?"
asked Kelbor Hal. In the little contact he had with emissaries from Terra, the Fabricator General was often forced to indulge humans in needless oral formalities, protocols, and irrelevant discourse until the subject eventually turned to the matter at hand. With adepts of the Mechanicum, such trivial matters were deemed irrelevant and quickly dispensed with. This entire conversation would be conducted in the binary fluency of the lingua technis, a language that left no room for uncertainty or ambiguity of meaning.
"Much has happened since the Emperor took his leave of the expeditionary forces," said Regulus. "A lineman's shift and new powers emerge from the shadows, offering their aid to those with the strength of vision to heed them. Horus Lupercal is one such individual, and he is now assuredly a friend of the Mechanicum."
Kelbor Hal's language centers easily read the implications of Regulus's words, and, though his emotions had long since been cut from him like a diseased tumor, old rancor rose to the surface as he recognized sentiments identical to those espoused in the bargain struck with Terra.
"I have heard words like that before," he said. "When Verticorda led the Emperor to my forge over 2 centuries ago, and I was forced to bend the knee to him, the ruler of the grubby Terran tribes promised us an equal role in his grand crusade of conquest. But where is that vaunted equality now? We toil to provide his armies with weapons of war, but receive nothing for our efforts but platitudes. Horus Lupercal is a warrior of vision. But what does he offer but more of the same?"
"He offers these," said Regulus,
as a silver-skinned arm rose from behind his shoulders, a delicate bronze caliper clutching a data wafer of silver and gold. Regulus reached up and took the proffered wafer with one of his primary arms before offering it to the Fabricator General.
"On the world of Aurelius, the Warmaster's Legion met and overcame a foe known as the Technocracy. Its armed forces bore a striking similarity to those of the Astartes, and it was clear that they had access to functioning STC technology."
"Standard template construction," breathed
Adept Malevolus, unable to keep the hunger from his voice. Kelbor Hal had long been aware that both Malevolus and Crom retained some unpleasantly human traits. Avarice, ambition, and desire to name but a few. Distasteful and unseemly in such senior adepts, but useful when it came to aligning their factions to his own.
"This technocracy had access to a functioning STC?" pressed Malevolus.
"Not just one," said Regulus, with more than a hint of theatricality.
"Two."
"Two?" asked Crom. "Such a thing has not been seen in 119 years. What manner of STCs did they possess?"
"One for the construction of a hitherto unknown mark of Astartes battle plate, and another for the production of lightweight solar generators, capable of supplying the power needs for an Epsilon 5 patent forge complex. Unfortunately, the actual construct machines were destroyed by the rulers of the Technocracy before Imperial forces could secure them."
Kelbor Hal could see Malevolus and Crom look hungrily at the STC wafer, an artifact that contained information worth more than both their forges combined, flawless electronic blueprints created from miracles of design and technological evolution, machines that could design and construct anything their operators desired. Such machines had allowed mankind to colonize vast swathes of the galaxy before the maelstrom of Old Night had descended and almost wiped humanity from existence. To discover a working construct machine was the greatest dream of the Mechanicum, but to have fully detailed plans created by such a machine ran a close second. Kelbor Hal could feel their desire to snatch the data wafer from Regulus and the crackling spikes in their radiating electrics.
"Horus Lupercal sends these gifts to Mars together with a solemn promise of an alliance with the priesthood of Mars. An alliance of equals, not of master and servant."
Kelbor Hal accepted the data wafer, surprised to feel a tremulous thrill of excitement at the thought of what he might learn from its contents. It was a thin sliver of metal, fragile and insignificant, yet capable of containing every written work on Terra 100 times over. No sooner had his metallic fingers touched the wafer than his haptic receptors read the data in a flow of electrons, and he knew that Regulus spoke the truth. Genocidal wars had been fought for information less valuable than was contained on this wafer. Millions had died in search of technology worth a fraction of its value. In centuries past, the Mechanicum had waged war on the tribes of Terra, dispatching expeditionary forces to humanity's birth world to plunder forgotten vaults of ancient citadels and wrest the buried secrets of the third planet's ancient technology from those who did not even know it was there, let alone how to use it. The Emperor had built his world on the bones of this long-buried science and, unwilling to share it, had fought the soldiers of Mars and hurled them back to the Red Planet before travelling to Mars in the guise of the Omnisire and a peacemaker, albeit a peacemaker who came at the head of an army of conquest. The peace that was offered was illusory, a conceit designed to conceal a darker truth. The Emperor offered peace with one hand while keeping a dagger behind his back with the other. In reality, the Emperor's offer was an ultimatum. Join with me, or I will simply take what I need from you. Faced with a choice that was no choice at all, Kelbor Hal had been forced to bargain away the autonomy of Mars and become a vassal planet of Terra.
These are great gifts indeed, said Kelbor Hal. Given freely?
Regulus bowed his head. As always, my master, you cut to the heart of matters with the precision of a laser.
No. Such gifts are not given freely. They come with a price.
A price?
Spat Crom, the glare of his eyes flaring in response.
The Warmaster seeks to exact more from us, when we have already pledged him the strength of our forges.
You seek to back out of the bargain with the Warmaster? Demanded Regulus.
We knew great things would be asked of us, but the measure of us is how we react to these challenges. Great reward comes only with great risk.
Kelbor Hal nodded, the blank face of his face mask slipping into the bland countenance of a conciliator.
Affirmation. Regulus is correct. We have come too far to balk at paying a price for such things. Already, we and our allies strike at those without the vision to see that Horus Lupercal is the true master of mankind.
The things we have done, said Adept Malevolus, the schemes we have set in motion. We have come too far and committed too much to back away from the fire simply because we fear its heat, Lucas. The destruction of Maximal's reactor, the death of Adept Ravishal, were they for nothing?
Chastened from two sides, Crom bowed his head and said,
Very well. What does the Warmaster ask?
Regulus said, That when it comes to strike, we guarantee to have Mars firmly under our control. The dissident factions must be quashed so that the forces of the Warmaster may launch his bid for supremacy without fear of counterattack. Any factions loyal to Terra must be brought to heel or destroyed before the Warmaster's forces reach the solar system.
He asks much of us, Regulus, said Kelbor Hal.
Why should we not believe we would be merely swapping one autocrat for another?
Horus Lupercal pledges to return the Martian Empire to its former glory, said Regulus, with the practiced ease of a statesman. Further, he swears to withdraw any non-Mechanicum forces from the Forge Worlds. Ambassador Melgator stepped forward, his black, mail-fringed cloak rustling on the smooth floor of the observation chamber. The ambassador rarely spoke when any but he and the object of his attention could hear him, and Kelbor Hal eagerly anticipated his words.
With respect, Adept Regulus, said Melgator, the Warmaster, blessed be his name, has already asked us for a great deal, and we have delivered.
Materiel and weapons are priority tasked to expeditions he favors and delayed to those not aligned with him.
He now asks more of us, and are these admittedly valuable STCs all he promises us in return? What else does he offer as proof of his continued friendship?
Regulus nodded, and Kelbor Hal saw that he had anticipated the question, the prepared answer flowing smoothly from his vocabulator.
A shrewd question, Ambassador, said Regulus. Horus Lupercal has given me an answer that I believe will satisfy you.
And that is?
Asked Malevolus. Regulus seemed to swell within his robes. The War Master will lift all restrictions on research into the forbidden technologies. To that end, I bring the protocols that will unlock the vaults of Moravec. A heavy silence descended on the gathered adepts, as the weight of the War Master's offer hung in the air like a promise too good to be true.
The vaults of Moravec have been sealed for 1,000 years,
hissed Crom.
The Emperor decreed that they never be opened.
And that means what to us?
Sneered Malevolus.
We already plot against the Emperor. What does one more betrayal matter?
The War Master has the power to open them, asked Melgator.
He is the Emperor's proxy, pointed out Regulus. What the Emperor knows, the War Master knows. All it will take to unlock the vault is your agreement to the War Master's designs.
And if we do not agree? Asked Kelbor Hal,
already extrapolating what great treasures and as-yet-unknown technologies might lie within the ancient vault. Moravec had been one of the most gifted of the ancient tech adepts of Terra, a man who had fled to Mars to escape persecution at the hands of superstitious barbarian tribes of the radiation wastelands of the Pan-Pacific.
If you do not agree, I will wipe the means of opening the vault from my memory coils, and it will remain sealed forever, said Regulus. But that will not be necessary, will it?
No,
agreed Kelbor Hal, his pallid features twisted in a grimace of a smile.
It will not.
No, at that length the pin can't be that thin, said Dahlia. It'll melt at the temperatures we're expecting inside the cowl transformer.
But any thicker, and it won't fit inside the cowl,
replied Severine, rubbing the heels of her palms against her temples and deliberately laying down the electrostylus upon the graphics tablet.
It won't work, Dahlia. You can't make it fit, and if there's no pin, the cowl won't remain precisely locked in place over the cardinal points of the skull. Face it, this design won't work.
Dahlia shook her head.
No. Alteramus knew what he was doing. This is how it has to be.
Then why is there no design for the cowl restraint?
Demanded Severine.
There's no design because he knew it wouldn't work. This whole project isn't something he ever intended to build. It was a theoretical exercise.
I don't believe that,
persisted Dahlia, turning to the wax paper drawings of the device that the long-dead Alteramus had produced. As she had for the last 5 rotations, she pored over the plans and diagrams she had painstakingly copied and updated to fill in the blank spots where the design was incomplete. They were so close. In the center of the workspace, Adept Zeth had furnished them. A gleaming silver device that resembled a highly modified grav couch was taking shape. Caxton lay underneath, assembling the circuit boards in the back support, while Zeus was machining the drum cylinders that would insulate the electrical conduits once the internal workings of the device were complete. Melisin circled the device, which was large enough to bear a fully grown human in a reclining position, her arms folded before her and one finger beating an irregular tattoo against her teeth. It had taken them a full 5 rotations to get this far, and with only 2 to go, they were either on the brink of their greatest triumph or doomed to ignoble failure. Despite the awkward frigidity of their initial meeting, they had worked well as a team, and relations had thawed in the face of each other's skills. Zeus was an engineer of rare talent, able to machine working parts with great skill and precision in amazingly short times. Caxton had proven to have an intuitive grasp of how machine parts fitted together, which, together with his uncanny knack of appreciating the knock-on effects of even the smallest change in the structure of a circuit, made him the ideal candidate to assemble the device. Severine was a draftsman extraordinaire, able to render Dahlia's haphazard sketches into working drawings from which parts could be manufactured. Melisin was skilled in all aspects of engineering and had a wide breadth of knowledge that covered the gaps that existed between the group's specializations. Not only that, but her organizational abilities were second to none, directing their labors with domineering efficiency once she understood the breathtaking scale of Dahlia's vision. Contrary to her expectations, Dahlia found herself warming to Melisin, recognizing the woman's initial frostiness as no more than a need for Dahlia to prove herself. Since Dahlia had divined the purpose of the machine Alteramus had designed, Their work had progressed at an exponential rate, but they had run into a problem that threatened to prevent them from completing their project. A means of linking and supporting the cowl that would cover the head of whoever sat in the machine. It seemed laughably trivial, yet it held the key to the entire device. Too thin, and it would melt, breaking the connection to the skull. Too thick, and it would not fit between the precisely machined, necessarily compact components, and would provide a surface area from which current would undoubtedly flare, thus disrupting the delicate balance of electrical harmonics generated within the subject's brain. To be thwarted by such a basic yet fundamental problem was uniquely frustrating. And Dahlia began to understand why the device had never been successfully constructed. As Severin held her head in her hands, Dahlia's eyes wandered over the drawings, letting the lines and curves of the design wash over her, the notations and measurements swimming around like leaves in a storm. Each portion of the design spun around in her head, each part interlinked and each motion subtly affecting the next with its variation. Dahlia felt her hands moving across the wax paper, hearing the scratch of the stylus she wasn't aware she'd picked up, as she doodled without thinking. The portions of the design that didn't exist were grey patches in her mind, as though the solution to the entire problem lay shrouded in a thick fog. No sooner had that image come to mind than it was as if a stiff breeze sprang up within her, the clouds of fog thinning and golden lines of fire appearing in their depths. Each line linked the spinning parts of the design, drawing them in tighter and tighter, as though a spun web was drawing all the disparate parts together. Dahlia felt her excitement grow, knowing that she was on the verge of something important. She kept her focus loose with conscious effort, knowing that to concentrate too fully on this intuitive assembly would be to lose it. The leaps of logic her subconscious was making were fragile and could tear like fine silk were they to be tugged too insistently. Her hands continued to scrawl on the wax paper as the golden lines in her imagination drew closer and closer, finally pulling the thousands of elements of the design together, and Dahlia held her breath as they slotted home, one by one, into a harmonious, complete whole. There. She could picture it now, complete and flawless in its wondrous complexity. They would need new parts, entirely redesigned schematics, and fresh circuit diagrams. Dahlia could see it all, how it would fit together, and how it would work. 23 hours later, Dahlia slotted the final piece of the machine home. The mechanism slid into place with a tiny hiss of pneumatics. Almost a full rotation ago, as she shook herself out of her intuitive reverie, she had looked down to see a fully worked-out plan of the images that she had seen in her flight of imagination. The drawings were crude, to be sure. But, with even a cursory check, she had known they were right. With a cry of elation, she had rushed over to Severin and swept the current crop of drawings onto the floor. Over Severin's cries of protest, Dahlia had called everyone over and begun to outline the scope of what the rough scrawls described. The team's initial skepticism had turned to cautious optimism, and then excitement, as they began to grasp the significance of what she was showing them. Each one shouted out what now seemed so obvious to them, as though the solution had been staring them in the face all along. As the new design began to take shape in the center of the workspace, Dahlia realized that it had been staring them in the face. They just hadn't realized it. Each of them, herself included, had been working within the hide-bound traditions laid down in the Principia Mechanicum, the tenets by which all workings of the machine were governed. Aside from Dahlia, the members of the team were grafted with shimmering electus on the backs of their hands to indicate that they had passed the basic competencies of the Principia and were thus members of the Cult Mechanicum. Perhaps with this success she too might be fitted with such a marking, though it was through thinking beyond the Principia's prescriptive doctrines that Dahlia had seen the solution to their problem.
"It's incredible," breathed Severin,
as though unable to believe what they had done.
"We did it," said Zouche.
"Dahlia did it,"
corrected Caxton, pushing an arm around Dahlia and kissing the top of her head.
"She figured it out when no one else could."
We all did it, said Dahlia, embarrassed by the praise. All of us. I just saw how it could work. I couldn't have done it without you. All of you. As always, it was Melisyn who brought them back down to reality with a jolt. Let's not be awarding ourselves the title of adept yet, everyone. We don't know if it works. It'll work, said Dahlia. I know it will. I have faith in it.
Oh, and faith now replaces empirical testing, does it?
Does it provide hard data to prove we succeeded?
No.
Dahlia smiled and bowed to Melisyn.
You're right, of course. We need to test the device and run 100 diagnostics to make sure of it, but I know they're going to be fine.
I'm sure you are right, allowed Melisyn with a slight smile that surprised everyone. But since we have to do them anyway, I suggest we take an hour's break before getting back to work and beginning the tests.
That won't be necessary, said an authoritative voice from behind them.
Dahlia jumped at the sound of the voice, turning to see Adept Coriol Zeth standing at the entrance to their workshop, her bronze armor reflecting the subdued lighting in gold highlights on the curves of her limbs. Dahlia followed the lead of her companions in bowing to Adept Zeth as she swept into the workspace, accompanied by two red-robed protectors who carried tall staves of iron and whose limbs were sheathed in augmetics. Dahlia recognized the protectors as Romeo 31 and smiled at the sight of him, or was it them? She couldn't quite decide. Zeth circled the newly completed device and ran her metal-clad fingers across its smooth, silver finish.
You are to be commended. This is fine work. It surpasses my expectations in every way.
Dahlia heard reverence and suppressed desire in Zeth's voice, as though the machine's completion was a dream the adept had not dared believe in too hard, for fear it might never come true. Dahlia looked up, watching as Zeth lifted the schematics that Severin had drawn up in the wake of her revelations in design, comparing them to the wax paper designs of Adept Ulterimus. Though Dahlia could not see her mistress's face behind the studded mask and inky black goggles, she knew there was an expression of puzzlement forming there.
I know it doesn't match the plans Adept Ulterimus drew, explained Dahlia. I'm sorry about that, but we couldn't get it to work any other way.
Zeth looked up as she spoke, replacing Severine's plans on the graphics table.
Of course you couldn't, said Zeth.
I don't understand.
Zeth picked up the wax paper copies of Ulterimus's designs and tore them in two, dropping the shorn halves to the floor.
This device doesn't work. It never has, and it never would.
But it will. I'm sure of it.
It will now, Dahlia, laughed Zeth. Ulterimus was a great adept, with many wondrous ideas and concepts. Ideas are the raw material of progress, and everything first takes shape in the form of an idea. But an idea by itself is worth nothing. An idea, like a machine, must have power applied to it before it can accomplish anything. The adepts who have won renown through having an idea are those who devoted every ounce of their strength and every resource they could muster to putting it into operation. Sadly, the practical implementation of Ulterimus's ideas left something to be desired, and many of his devices were designed with elements that did not exist, or were purely theoretical.
Dahlia was confused, feeling as though she were missing some essential point Zeth expected her to grasp.
Then, how did you expect us to build it?
Because I knew that your innate understanding of the why of technology would allow you to change what did not work and invent the pieces of the puzzle that needed inventing. You are the very embodiment of what I call ornamental knowledge.
Ornamental knowledge?
Zeth nodded.
The adepts of Mars arrange their thought processes like neat machines, equipped to work efficiently, if narrowly, and with no extraneous organs or useless parts. I prefer a mind to be a box of scraps of brilliant fabric, odd gems, worthless but fascinating curiosities, tinsel, quaint bits of carving, and a reasonable amount of healthy dirt. Shake the machine, and it goes out of order. Shake the box, and it adjusts beautifully to its new position. I know you do not yet appreciate this, but many of the things you created to make this device work simply did not exist before you designed and built them. You mean we created something? No?
Gasped Mellison. Precisely, agreed Zeth. That is not something to be taken lightly. This device would never have worked if you had followed the plans I gave you. But you, and I include you all in this, were able to see beyond what the slavish adherence to the Principia Mechanicum could ever have imagined. Zeth stood before them, tall and golden and radiant. Such a thing is a gift that will allow me to lift the Imperium into a golden age of scientific progress not seen since humanity set forth from its birth rock.